Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 499, titled The Seco Spring of 2001. This is being recorded on February 20th of 2005. The title refers to Seco, the Saudi investment company, the European holding company for many of the bin Laden family's assets, and they are very wealthy, very powerful, and in charge of some profound assets, and the fact that there were a number of interesting transactions involving Seco in the first part of 2001. I suspect, and I'm not alone in that regard, I suspect that some of these deals may very well have been connected to the September 11, 2001 attacks, and we're going to take a look at what may be a critical part of the September 11th money trail right now. We're again going to be looking at Seco as something of a nexus that connects many of the disparate elements of the September 11th investigation. It connects Arabs, Saudi Arabs in particular, with the Muslim Brotherhood. They were connected before, but it provides a link between that and the covert operations of the 1980s, and in turn, so-called neo-Nazis as well as tributaries running in the direction of the old guard. And again, I think Seco, and in particular people like Baudin Dunant, co-chairman of the board of Seco, a fellow who opened a bunch of offshore accounts for Seco, and a fellow who also was a friend of, protege of, and attorney for François Genoux, one of the most important Third Reich espionage activists in the pre-war, World War II, and post-war periods. With Seco, we have something of a connecting nexus between the various seemingly disparate elements of the September 11th mosaic. We're going to review some activities really quickly that took place in early 2001. This is from the paper that we were reading from in the first part of the discussion. Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa. That was authored by Kevin Coogan, author of Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey, and the Postwar Fascist International. This paper was written in September of 2002. It's available on the web, and there will be a link in the article in the description for the record 499. I think what I'm going to do, since this broadcast heavily overlaps 498, I think I'm going to combine the two programs into a single description. There will be some information available inside in the descriptions that I did not have time to include in the original broadcast. Now, talking about some of the people who were members of the board of directors of Seco, and it probably still are, there was a fellow named Carlos Rochat, who was on a flight manifest with the Osama bin Laden when he was making some very, very interesting stops in Milan, Italy. And what is noted here is that it might very well be a false name for a Charles Rochat. And skipping down, we read, it's equally possible that bin Laden's silence about Charles Rochat is meant to avoid other problems that might arise, such as why Charles Rochat and Baudin Dunant, two members of the Seco Advisory Board who were attorneys on May 21st, 2001, liquidated the business Tyndall Trust that had first been registered in Villars-sur-Glâne near Fribourg in January of 1986. They fulfilled the same function for a sister society of the Tyndall Trust that shared the same name and that was opened up in 1990 in Geneva and liquidated in January of 2001. One of the top managers of the Tyndall Trust since its founding was the American tax attorney Willard Zucker, who lives in Geneva. Zucker also controls the Lake Geneva-registered Compagnie de Services Fiduciaires, or CSF. And CFS had, along with participation from Tyndall Trust, assumed financial management for a corporate group named Enterprise. Enterprise, however, had nothing to do with the successor company to the 1983-founded successor to the Albert Hakim and U.S. General Richard Secord founded Stanford Technologies Trading Group International, or STTGI, which later changed its name to Enterprise and administered secret and illegal weapons shipments with Iran and the Contras. I would add parenthetically, Stanford Technology Trading Group began as a subsidiary of International Imaging Systems, which was part of the TCI Electronics Company founded by Otto von Bolschwing, Adolf Eichmann's superior in administering so-called Jewish matters, unquote, for the SS. And also his protege, that is to say von Bolschwing's protege, Helena von Damm, picked all of the personnel lists from which Ronald Reagan made his cabinet appointments when he was President of the United States. Continuing, speaking of the Enterprise, Enterprise, however, had nothing to do with the successor company to the 1983 founded successor to the Albert Hakim and U.S. General Richard Secord founded Stanford Technologies Trading Group International, or STTGI, which later changed its name to Enterprise and administered secret and illegal weapons shipments with Iran and the Contras. The same Willard Zucker arranged payments from the Enterprise account of Oliver North. In 1986, the Syrian Manzer al-Qassar was paid from an Enterprise account for a weapons deal with the Contras. But al-Qassar was not only one of the world's great weapons dealers, he also had close ties with Islamic fundamentalist and terrorist groups in the Middle East. Al-Qassar also worked with an international group interested in sending toxic and atomic waste materials by ship to Mozambique. As for Zucker, he has constantly denied that any of his activity on behalf of the Enterprise group from America infringed on Swiss or U.S. law. So note again the fact that the SECO milieu is heavily intersected with the Iran-Contra milieu, the Iran-Contra Iraqate and Afghan Mujahideen support activities directed by the elder George Bush. Now note again that Shahrokhshia and Baudin Dunant liquidated on May 21, 2001, the business Tyndall Trust, and that they also liquidated a sister organization with the same name in January of 2001, and that one of the people that was involved with the Tyndall Trust was the American tax attorney Willard Zucker, who was a player in the Enterprise and the other Iran-Contra-related activities. Recall that in the book Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, we took a look at the fact that SECO, and we reviewed this in Side 1, SECO had its aviation subsidiary training pilots at little old Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, and that as Daniel Hofziker so heroically began investigating the activities in and around Huffman Aviation and Arnie Krutoff's school, he came across numerous evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of some of the sanctified drug trafficking networks that were involved with the Iran-Contra milieu. Now, bearing in mind the liquidation of those entities by Baudin Dunant and Shahrokhshia in early 2001, January and May respectively, what we're going to do now is to take a look at some other interesting financial transactions that SECO was involved in the spring of 2001. Hence, the title of this broadcast, The SECO Spring of 2001. One of the emerging experts on offshore financing, a very, very important subject both for the interests of pursuing multinational corporations and their machinations, and also for pursuing the activities of covert operations and major organized crime syndicates, Lucy Commissar is emerging as one of the experts in offshore banking. Offshore refers to tax havens and not necessarily something that is physically located in the middle of the ocean. In 2002, specifically March 15th of 2002, Lucy published an amazing article titled Explosive Revelations in These Times magazine. And we're going to be quoting from that I'm going to quote from that right now. After noting that the bank Altaqua, headed up by Youssef Nada, the financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, had access to the Clearstream network through the Banco del Gotardo, Lucy goes on to note the following, and again, this information comes from Ernest Bacchus, one of the founders of the Clearstream Network. Clearstream is basically a counting house for banks, and it also is owned by the Deutsche Börse, the German stock exchange, which in turn is owned by major German commercial banks, which are themselves controlled by the Underground Reich. Turning now to Banking with Bin Laden by Lucy Commissar, a sidebar to Explosive Revelations in These Times of March 15, 2002, we read the following. In what he calls a spectacular discovery, unquote, Ernest Bacchus reports that in the weeks before CEO Andre Lucy was forced to leave Clearstream last May, a series of 16 unpublished accounts were opened under the name of the Saudi Investment Company, or SECO, the Geneva holding company of the Saudi bin Laden group, which is run by Osama's brother, Yaslam bin Laden. Some family members spell the name differently. Yaslam bin Laden insists that he has nothing to do with his brother, but evidence suggests SECO is tied into Osama's financial network. SECO is associated with the Dar al-Mal al-Islami, or DMI, an Islamic financial institution also based in Geneva and presided over by Prince Mohammed al-Faisal al-Saud, a cousin of Saudi King Fahd, that directs millions a year to fundamentalist movements. And then it goes on to note that there are links between DMI and the law firm Magnin Dunant Partners a key partner in that is Baudin Dunant, whom we looked at earlier. Now, note again, before CEO André Lucy was forced to leave Clearstream, in apparently right about May of 2001, a series of 16 unpublished accounts were opened under the name of the Saudi investment company, or SECO. As we looked at in some of our discussions with Lucy Commissar, these unpublished accounts would be largely inscrutable to examination by investigators. And also, the unpublished accounts are with the Clearstream Network are supposed to be available only to banks. So, one of the questions that I think needs to be answered, and I think the answer to this question might very well be one of the critical investigative elements in September 11th, what relationship is there, if any, between the liquidation by Baudin Dunant and Charles Rochat, both members of the board of directors of SECO, of the Tyndall Trust and sister organizations in January through May of 2001, and the opening of these 16 unregistered accounts with Clearstream by SECO in May of that same year. Again, we've got key members of the board of directors of SECO liquidating trusts and accounts in early 2001, and SECO is opening up 16 unpublished accounts with Clearstream in the spring, late spring apparently, of 2001. Are these 16 unpublished accounts to be used for moving some of the monies from the liquidated trusts? And again, those liquidated trusts overlap the milieu of Iran-Contra. Again, I think these are very, very, very important questions to be asked. And recall, too, one of the aspects of Daniel Hopsicker's heroic book, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, one of the key aspects of that is the fact that, again, Huffman Aviation and Arnie Krutoff's and Wally Hilliard's related operations were not only overlapping the world of drug smuggling and the Iran-Contra-connected drug networks in Florida, but also the fact that people like Hilliard, Rudy Deckers, and Wally Hilliard were able to make tremendous amounts make huge transactions in cash. Rudy Deckers, in particular, was able to come up with great big wads of cash to make purchases when he needed them, yet most of the time he couldn't even pay his rent at Huffman Aviation. And recall, of course, that the milieu of Rudy Deckers and Mohammed Atta in Florida was German, including some sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists. But one of the questions I'm asking here, given the fact that SECO was training pilots at Huffman Aviation, given the fact that Huffman Aviation was one of the epicenters for the infiltration of the hijackers, the September 11th hijackers, into the U.S., and given the fact that Rudy Deckers and company often were broke, couldn't pay their bills, and yet would then come up not only flush with cash, but flush with huge amounts of cash and could begin paying off people with cash. Again, what relationship does there exist, if any, between the liquidation of those Tyndall Trust and related accounts by Charles Rochat and Baudin Dunant in early 2001, the opening of the 16 unpublished accounts with SECO in May of 2001, and the monies that seem to be finding their way into the hands of people like Rudy Deckers, a man who couldn't pay his bills but had tons of cash when he needed it, at little old Huffman Aviation, where SECO was sending its pilots to train. Okay? Turning once again now to Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida by Daniel Hopsicker, a book I cannot recommend too strongly, a must-read for anyone serious about September 11th. Because national reporters apparently had no clue about his shady local reputation and his inability for 6 months straight to pay his rent on time, no one questioned how Deckers had come to be so flush with cash just 3 weeks before the attack. But it did strike some people as strange, like Bill Warner, a private investigator in Sarasota who made it his business to delve into Rudy Deckers' financial affairs to explain his sudden pre-9/11 change in liquidity. Quote, Rudy Deckers somehow came up with $10,000 in late October of 2001, he told us, again quoting, to finally pay off the woman's sexual harassment suit. He also came up with $56,000 in early November to pay off another lawsuit with FH 1100 Manufacturing Corporation. but he had filed a UCC with M&I Bank Northeast for all inventory of Huffman Aviation way back in March of 2000. So he appears to have had no source of additional financing for this $65,000 cash outlay in late October and early November of 2001. There are enough judgments in his name and his company's name to paper his office walls, said Warner. How do you obtain that much cash under such severe conditions? Unquote. Well, indeed, that was something that Rudy Decker was able to do a lot. So was Wally Hilliard. So was Rick Bolke, another of their affairs and another of their associates in Air Florida. And again, the activities with which Hilliard and Decker's were involved certainly involved drug smuggling. So that's where some of that stuff came. And again, some of the Iran-Contra and covert operations connected drug smuggling of the 80s and early 90s runs through SECO and overlaps the milieu of SECO. But again, with all of this cash suddenly appearing in the hands of Rudy Decker's and company after 9/11, and with Charles Rochat and Baudin Dunant of SECO liquidating accounts in Tyndall with Tyndall Trust and sister funds in early 2001, and those managed in conjunction with Willard Zucker, an Iran-Contra player, one wonders about the liquidation of those accounts in early 2001, the opening of the 16 unpublished Clearstream accounts by SECO in the late spring of 2001, and the moving of these monies. I suspect there's a connection. I can't prove it, but I suspect there's a connection, and recall again that SECO's aviation subsidiary was training pilots at Lilo Huffman Aviation, of all places. Now, again, I've spoken about SECO as being something of a pivot point. One of the areas of pivot, so to speak, concerns the relationship between SECO, through people like Baudin Dunant, and also Mardam Khalil Bey, and people like François Genoux. François Genoux is one of the most important figures of the 20th century, in my opinion, not very well known. For the record, program number 453, among others, carries a good biography of François Genoux. That, in turn, is excerpted from Kevin Coogan's landmark text, Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International. Turning back to Kevin Coogan's paper, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, we read, what's even more surprising than finding out about the links between Rochat and Dunant with a representative of the Iran-Contra affair like Zucker is finding a connection point between Islamic terrorism and the far right. For it turns out that Baudin Dunant was not only the attorney for François Genoux, the old Swiss Nazi who died in 1996, but his close friend. And more about the Genoux-Baudin-Dunant relationship. This is from the book In the Name of Osama Bin Laden by Roland Jacquard, published in softcover by Duke University Press. Speaking of SECO, this company, established by the Bin Ladens in 1980, is the flagship for the group's activities in Europe. It's headed by Islam Bin Laden, and the board of directors is made up almost exclusively of members of the family clan, except for a Swiss citizen, Baudin Dunant. This well-known lawyer from French-speaking Switzerland, who was on the boards of several dozen companies, came to public notice in 1983 when he agreed to represent the Swiss banker François Genoux, a controversial figure who had been a disciple of Hitler and sole heir of Goebbels' copyrights before becoming one of the financiers of the FLN during the Algerian War. The friendships of the Bin Ladens sometimes seem surprising, but they are logical. François Genoux has always been pro-Arab. So again, Genoux was not only, or Baudin Dunant, not only a friend of and protege of Genoux, but his attorney. And still more later on in Kevin Coogan's paper, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, we read, my own belief is that it's less of the apparently fantastic and James Bond-like quality of this analysis that's most difficult to understand. The real difficulty is the utter ignorance of most Westerners, Americans in particular, about the very existence of such people as François Genoux. Thus, when Ernest Backes, one of Europe's leading experts in money laundering, told the Luxembourg-based economic journal Plus Minus last year that he believed the financial source of funds for the 9/11 terrorists would ultimately be traced back to Swiss bank accounts established by Genoux, few Americans had any idea what Backes could possibly be talking about. For this same reason, there's been virtually no independent investigation into SECO's Baudin Dunant's relationship to Genoux or for that matter, the role that Syrian-born Mohammed Mardam Bey, believed to be related to a former Syrian foreign minister, has played, both as a member of Magnan Dunant and Associates, as well as Bey's possible links with Janu. And what does it mean when we are told that Youssef Nata, for example, is believed by Egyptian authorities to have worked for German intelligence in World War II? Well, one of the things that this means is that we're looking at networking, not only networking between two generations of Nazis and fascists, the old guard and the new wave, so to speak, but we're also looking at some hard networking between some of these individuals. And again, I think SECO is in many ways the pivot point. It's the key. It's what joins the covertistan of the 1980s and 90s that was run by the Reagan and Bush administrations with the operations of the 9/11 milieu. It's what joins, in turn, the operations of the Iran-Contra gang with some of the old guard of the Third Reich, people like François Janeau, and some of the new wave of Nazis and fascists around the world, people like Ahmed Huber of Bank al-Taqwa, and some of the NPD and National Alliance fascists from Germany and the United States that we see. Now, in the passage that I just read from Kevin Coogan, you heard a reference to Ernest Bacchus, one of the founders of the Clearstream Network, one of the principal sources for information about Clearstream's operations, and a man who, like Daniel Hopsiger, like Lucy Commissar and others, is a true hero in his own right. What we're going to do now is to review an excerpt that we've looked at before. This is called Insider Trading Prior to the Terror Attacks in the U.S., Speculating on Terror, Who Profited from the Attacks. It's by Rolf Bovier and Pierre Matthias from the Bayerische Rundfunk Online, that's Bavarian State Radio. This was an interview they conducted with Ernest Bacchus. Financial expert Ernest Bacchus of Luxembourg has studied white-collar crime in the field of banking for many years. According to him, there are indications of unusual transactions with which a group associated with bin Laden could have earned money. You can, for example, examine whether within a certain time period there's been an attack against the securities of a given airline company. Since these securities are safe in a clearing system, you can't get an overall view of who the owner was at a particular time. According to Bacchus' information, the trail leads to Switzerland, to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer François Janeau and evidently still survives. Says Bacchus, one of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the bin Laden family and one of its investment bankers. It's known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executor for Adolf Hitler and part of the terror milieu. In an email communication with yours truly, Ernest Bacchus indicated that basically the institution he was referring to was the Bank al-Taqwa, something we focused on at great length in these broadcasts. The Bank al-Taqwa was founded by Youssef Nada. It is the financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization allied with, at various times, Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. It then jumped first to British intelligence and then to the CIA at the end of World War II. And the Muslim Brotherhood was the parent organization for the Afghan Mujahideen and also for al-Qaeda, which morphed from the Afghan Mujahideen effort. Youssef Nada, as we've looked at, was a Third Reich intelligence agent, and basically, in effect, it appears that Ahmed Huber and Youssef Nader were working as cutouts for François Janeau when they set up the Bank al-Taqwa. And we should also note here that Ahmed Huber represents something of a pivot point as well. Ahmed Huber was not only a protege of Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, founder of the Palestinian National Movement, a major in the SS, founder of three Balkan Muslim Waffen-SS divisions, one of which was revived in the mid-1980s, but also Ahmed Huber was a protege of Johann von Leers, in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for the Third Reich. Ahmed Huber is also, and perhaps in this regard even more importantly, a liaison individual with modern fascist groups. Ahmed Huber is very close to the German NPD, the top German neo-Nazi organization, by the way, now with seats in some of the state parliaments in Germany. And the NPD, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts, also had very close connections with the American National Alliance. In the book Dollars for Terror, we took a look at the fact that Ahmed Huber in the 1990s had made a trip to Chicago and had been working at bringing together the far right and Islamists in a union against the United States and world Jewry, Israel in particular. And Ahmed Huber's indicated that, in fact, just such an alliance was formed. Again, I think that the Al-Taqwa / SECO link here is something of a pivot point. Recall that the National Alliance is the largest, or arguably the most important, American neo-Nazi group. It was founded by the late William Luther Pierce, the author of, among other titles, The Turner Diaries. And recall that, as we're going to review now from the newsletter Counterpunch, in 1998, the National Alliance's head, William Luther Pierce, had a very interesting prognostication. This is by Jack McCarthy, writing for Counterpunch. Upon perusing his speeches from 1998 to 99, I discovered that Pierce, who heads the so-called National Alliance, did indeed utter some most interesting pre-September 11th, if not prophetic, remarks about Osama bin Laden and bioterrorism. The running theme in Pierce's commentaries is, to paraphrase his hero Hitler, that Osama bin Laden's warning to America is, "I am coming and so is bioterrorism." In one chilling commentary, Pierce, after noting that bin Laden and the rest of the lost generation of angry Muslim youth had had it with their parents' compromises and were hell-bent on revenge against infidel America, issued this stark prophetic warning in a 1998 radio address entitled "Stay Out of Tall Buildings." Quote, "New Yorkers who work in tall office buildings anything close to the size of the World Trade Center might consider wearing hard hats," Pierce warned. Now, recall that Pierce is the author of the Turner Diaries. That is, I don't know what the legal definition of foreknowledge of a crime is, but that's pretty close, if not actual foreknowledge. Recall that the climactic episode of the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack against the Pentagon. Of course, that's just fiction. We know nothing like that could ever happen in real life. And again, in examining the pivot point of SECO and also the related Bank Al-Taqwa, we see the connecting points between many seemingly disparate elements. Of course, people like Alan Dulles were involved with actually setting up Saudi Arabia in the first place, along with British spy and Nazi double agent Jack Filby. To this day, the old Dulles law firm Sullivan and Cromwell is the legal counsel for the Saudi bin Laden group. Alan Dulles was setting up the Bush family's investments in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, and the Saudis to this day continue to employ people like William Grimstead, an American neo-Nazi whom they employed as a Washington lobbyist. So again, some of the seemingly far-flung and disparate elements that we see as we examine the landscape of September 11th begin to draw closer. They begin to intersect with and overlap one another when we take a look at SECO. And again, I think SECO is in many ways the investigative key to September 11th. I've made many allusions to other programs. There are copious amounts of written material on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Please use the descriptions that I'm writing for these programs. They often include information that I didn't have time to put in the original broadcast, and they are a vast, voluminous, and sadly underutilized resource. Also, there are links on the Spitfire website to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey. That station is archiving the entire For the Record series on Real Audio, and now the programs are putting up are also available, many of them anyway, on MP3 as well. Also, the Spitfire website has links to two sites from which you can download Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, links to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that have the declassified U.S. government documents that prove the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II. So please use those websites. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 499, the SECO Spring of 2001. This has been recorded on February 20th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.